You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
People often judge us as much by the way we talk as what we're actually saying. Natives of the New York metropolitan area have always been known for their distinct way of talking, or is it talking? For a city that is constantly in flux, we thought it might be a good time to see whether the sounds of our area are changing as well. And joining us now is Kara Becker, an assistant professor of linguistics at Reed College, who has studied the dialect of our area. I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
Are there specific characteristics that define a New York accent?
Absolutely, yeah. In most regional dialects, you can identify certain vowels and consonants that will make it unique from, say, a more general American accent or from another place. In New York, some things that your listeners will recognize, a lot of people will drop their R's at the end of a word or syllables. So, you know, instead of father, you might say father.
Rockefeller.
Exactly. And the vowel you were talking about, that's a distinctive vowel of the New York City area. So that gets, we used to talk about the Saturday Night Live skit, coffee talk or something like that. That's a distinctive vowel.
We also add R's to some words?
At times we do,
We drop them from some words.
We drop them and then we add them at the same time. They're related, so we're aware of our R's. So because we drop them, sometimes we insert them when they're not needed. So you might get, we call it an intrusive R. You might get something like, I'm trying to think of a good example, but it, you know, it'll come
there
in
used
at the
to be
end
a commercial for Wausau that where they said
right.
Wausau.
Right, exactly. At the end of a vowel, right? So you get something like instead of law, lore, or something like that.
Now, why is that? Is this because New York has been the gateway city to America? I've thought about the Chicago accent, people from Philadelphia. Boston, the Midwest,
sure.
Other regions of the country all have different kinds of accents, and I've always wondered whether it was determined by who settled there.
That's a huge part of it. So New York and Boston actually has a history that's related to New York. All the areas along the eastern seaboard have been influenced by the settlement patterns of that area, and especially the time at which they were settled. So at the time at which New York had a real big influx of immigrants from the United Kingdom, those linguistic patterns that those folks were using at the time are kind of the ones that have left a legacy in New York. So the R dropping that I'm talking about, for instance, that's here in New York. It's not in Philadelphia. It's not a history of Philadelphia's accent. And that's because the immigrants that came at that time were pronouncing their R's.
Oh, but Philadelphia was settled by Quakers from England.
Sure, yeah, and from different areas in England. So all those things come into play, the timing, where the folks were from, and then, you know, a lot of other factors as well.
Should I assume also that there was an attempt to break away from English ways of speaking, to establish our own patterns of speech?
There absolutely was. Although what's interesting about New York is that it's a little bit different in the sense that I think we stayed a little more connected to Britain a little bit longer, which is why we retain some of the linguistic features like the R dropping. So, you know, today in England, people drop their R's as well. So New York was actually a place that had a little more stronger tie to, say, a place like London.
But we were originally a Dutch city. Do we see any of that influence?
Not so much. Not so much in pronunciation. We do, of course, see it in things like vocabulary, lexical items. So, you know, we have stoop and we have the Bowery and things like that. And those are carryovers from that time. But there isn't a lot of influence on the actual pronunciation and the accent.
People ascribe specific accents to different boroughs. Have you noticed that in your research?
Yeah, it's a very exciting and controversial question. Linguists generally believe that there is not so much of a borough distinction in New York City. What we really think is that there's more stratification in terms of people's social backgrounds, so that when people say, for instance, that they can recognize an accent like Brooklynese, what they're really listening to is a more working class or lower middle class New York accent, which you can find in any of the boroughs. That doesn't mean that we haven't done a fabulous study to make sure that that's actually the case. But linguistically, we haven't yet been able to identify specific features that make the boroughs different from each other.
And why would Brooklyn have a working class accent more than some of the other boroughs? It seems to me that as a Brooklynite, born and bred, that we have the full stratum in Brooklyn as you do in every other borough.
Absolutely. I think probably what's happening is people use it as a little bit of a proxy. There's some demographic information. You can think of Manhattan, for instance, where I did my field work, as a little bit more wealthier of a borough in terms of its median income or something like that. But yeah, of course, there's a full stratum in all of the boroughs, but we sort of seem to link that social stratification to some boroughs and not others. So you talk about Brooklyn or maybe, you know, the Bronx or something like that.
Well, there was an article in the New York Daily News a couple of weeks ago about how the Queens accent was dying. Queens may be the most diverse place in the world.
I think it is.
So is it dying or just changing?
I don't think it's dying, and I don't think the New York City accent in general is dying. I think you're absolutely right. It's changing. And part of that has to do with the incredible diversity in the city. So there's no way we can imagine that the accent's not being affected by this diversity.
But it's my sense that New York accents have changed over my lifetime.
They absolutely have. So the feature that we've already talked about, the dropping of the R, that's currently going through a change that, you know, your parents would have dropped many, many more R's than you, and your children will drop less R's, and that's going through a change over time. So we may see that at some point. We may see New Yorkers pronouncing all of their R's, for instance.
Well, there was a time when it was predicted that everyone would speak the same because of television, radio. And that hasn't happened. But what does change those patterns? Is it the new immigrant groups that come in, or does education have play a role in it?
Oh, absolutely. There's so many factors, and some of them are just simply internal. One is the fact that languages, all languages, dialects, languages, they just change over time. So there are internal things that go on with languages, and we can't always pinpoint the time and the place at which things will start to change, but they do. And then there are all these external factors. And so you mentioned something about education. I know I consider that upward mobility, people who want to go somewhere. A lot of them are motivated to lose their kind of regional accents. That's a very common thing. And in fact, in New York, you'll see people going to dialect coaches or, you know, making a real effort to kind of lose that connection to their local accent. And that's common. It's also common for people to have a lot of pride in their local accent and, in fact, to keep it and to maintain it. So both sides of the coin are true.
Doesn't New York have one of the highest rates of understanding of Yiddish words?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yiddish is a wonderful example. We talked a little bit about, you know, some Dutch words, but Yiddish is a great example of a ton of words that have come into the sort of general New York vocabulary that people who don't live in New York, whether they're of Jewish descent or not, have no idea what they mean. So, you know, if you're from New York, you know what schlep means and you know what, you know, mashugana means and all these things. And
you know what a good pastrami sandwich is.
Exactly. You know a lot of things. But you know you have a pretty good Yiddish vocabulary. And that's really fascinating. And that is not necessarily about someone's ethnicity, but more about kind of the influence that Yiddish has had on the accent itself. Yeah.
I suspect when you go to Portland, which is where you're moving to,
right,
you're not going to find too many people who know what the word schlep means.
I don't think so. In fact, there's some great interviews that have been done where people can't even pronounce the word because, you know, some of the consonant clusters in Yiddish aren't found in English. So schla, for instance, this is a consonant cluster a lot of people in the rest of the U.S. can't even say.
We've often talked on this show about how language is fluid and we can't control the changes in the meanings of words no matter how much we would like to. Do you think the same thing is true about how words are pronounced?
To some extent.
For example, if I were to go to an old dictionary, I suspect that I would see preferred pronunciations that would be much more limited in the past to today.
In some ways, that's true. You know, certainly there's always people who are trying to control and limit the way we pronounce things and the way we say things and our grammar and all that kind of stuff. But because language is such a dynamic force and because it's used by people every day, by everyday people, it's always changing and it's always very fascinating to observe those changes.
My guest is Kara Becker, assistant professor of linguistics at Reed College at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. We're talking about the accents of New York. And while we were preparing for this segment, you sent us a phrase that linguists use to elicit dialogue. It's a bit of a tongue twister. Bother. Father bought hot coffee at the car park. What is it about that phrase that brings out New Yorkness in people's speech patterns?
Well, there's a couple, there's a number of words in there, actually, that if you have a New York accent, that we're really going to hear it. So I don't know if I'm supposed to give it away now, but I think if we play some of the clips at some point, we're going to really hear people with New York accents. They're going to have very special pronunciations of some of the words in that sentence.
And one of our producers went out to Union Square yesterday and asked people from all over the region to read it for us, and let's listen to a few.
Terrific.
My name's Alex. I'm from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. Mother, father bought hot coffee at the car park.
As he said, he's from Bensonhurst, which is traditionally a working-class neighborhood. What degree do you think that social class or economic standing plays in the accents that people have?
I think it plays a large role, probably a larger role than a lot of people would like to admit. You know, we generally don't like to acknowledge that there's class stratification in the U.S. Linguistically, it's just there. So the fact that if you're a very upper-class person from New York, you're not going to perhaps sound like Alex.
But was that a typical New York accent?
To me, absolutely, yeah.
Let's listen to another one. This is Sammy from Queens.
Sammy, Queens. Father bought hot coffee at the car park.
Well, but there was a difference, perhaps because Sammy is a Latina.
Yeah, Sammy sounds non-white, absolutely. And so I think that's another whole interesting topic that has to do with the New York accent and the way that it's changing, which is that linguists used to think that really the people who used regional dialects were all of European descent. And in New York, this is absolutely not the case and not what my research is finding. So we're finding people of all different backgrounds using New York features, and Sammy is a great example.
Well, Rosie Perez would
describe
as having a very Brooklyn accent.
Yes,
but so is Marty Markowitz. They probably have certain things in common, but
some things in common and some things different. So the fact that you could maybe pick out that Sammy was Latina means that in addition to using some New York things, she's also using some things that may connect her back to her ethnicity as well. So she's got maybe perhaps a more complex, repertoire of features that she's using.
Now, there are people, you said Manhattan is less likely, although Manhattan has any number of areas where the accent would be exactly the same.
It absolutely does.
But for those people who would be considered generally accentless, would a linguist still be able to pick up the New York aspect?
It really depends. So, you know, we talked about upward mobility and this idea that a lot of people will make an effort to lose their regional accent if they kind of want to sound like they don't have an accent. People are more or less successful at that. So it really depends on how kind of good you are at accents. It depends on how hard you're trying and what you're tapping into. So, yeah, sometimes linguists can tell. You may sound pretty close, you know, pretty general American, but you may not have caught all the features.
Well, many people will tell you that there may be one distinct New York accent, but that there's a different Long Island accent, a different New Jersey accent. Let's listen to Fred from Long Island.
Fred, East Meadow, Long Island. Father bought hot coffee at the car park.
Would that sound distinctively Long Island to you?
Not necessarily. There's something interesting he's doing at the end with his vowels before R and car and park. But he has the traditional features. So he's got the R-lessness that he's dropping. He's got the distinction between hot and coffee, right, which all New Yorkers have. So the boundary between where kind of New York accent ends and something distinctively Long Island begins is very blurred. So it would depend on, you know, kind of how close in he lives. There are distinctive things that happen on Long Island, but it's much more as you get farther out.
So the further into Suffolk County you go.
I think so, yeah.
The same applied to New Jersey, do you think? Let's listen to Melanie from New Jersey.
My name is Melanie. I'm from North Bergen, New Jersey. Father bought hot coffee at the car park.
So North Bergen is actually right across the water. So it's a little different, actually, looking at the boundaries between New York and New Jersey. There's a bit stronger of a dialect boundary. But Melanie falls within the New York part. So she sounds like a New Yorker to me. And she has, again, a lot of the same features. I'm from 30 miles away from where she lives. But as you can hear in my voice, I don't have any New York features really at all that we've been talking about. I have a few things, but there's a bit more of a dramatic break so that people who live very close to the city will have a New York accent, and those that live just kind of a little bit farther away, not so much. They sound much more like New Jersey.
Well, we're going to throw out a little challenge to listeners, especially those who believe that there are distinctions from borough to borough.
Great.
Let's listen to something, and we'll take a little break. And when we come back, give us a call at 212-433-9692 and tell us where you think this person is from. And we will do a collation and also speak to a couple of you who have strong ideas about it.
Bother. Father bought hot coffee at the car park.
We're back with Kara Becker, Assistant Professor of Linguistics at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. We're talking about the accents of New York, something she's been studying for years. And when we went into that break, Kara, we played something from a mystery New Yorker. I'm going to play it again and invite listeners to tell us where this person comes from.
Great.
Bother. Father bought hot coffee at the car park.
Where do you think it's from?
I think that's a trick question for me, only because I am going to continue to toe the line and say that I think we don't have borough distinctions. So he sounds like a New Yorker. That's my guess.
Well, Esther, what do you think? Esther from Brooklyn?
I thought he sounded like he came from Manhattan.
And what made you think that?
Perhaps the way he pronounced his R's.
Uh-huh.
And he did pronounce a lot of his R's. That's true.
Okay, well, thank you. We go now to Ariana from Brooklyn. And you think?
Hi, I think he's from Manhattan also. It's the same thing I said.
Because of the R's?
No, not necessarily because of the R's. What I said to the interviewers, New Yorkers have an sense, I think, of where someone is from. And what I mentioned to her is, did the researchers think all about the difference between outsiders and insiders or locals being able to detect accents? I think if you're from somewhere, you kind of have an innate detective sense of where someone is from. So I didn't even try to figure out what about his accent made me think Manhattan. I just felt that it was Manhattan.
But you pronounce your R's, and you're from Brooklyn.
She could probably use me as a case study because I was educated in different parts of Brooklyn and in specialty schools. And then also my family, although they're all from Brooklyn, have from different income stratas. And I think that there are a lot of factors that make my accent very special and not specifically Brooklyn. And people comment on it all the time. No one ever from Brooklyn. It's my trick. It's my mystery trick.
They can't place you from Brooklyn? Yeah. I think that speaks to kind of what we were talking about a little bit about this sort of social background. But I love your point about the difference between, you know, a researcher studying a dialect and a native speaker of that dialect having some intuitions and things that we don't necessarily have. And that's absolutely true. And because I'm a researcher, it's just that I'm trying to figure out what it is that you guys are tapping into, right? And so far, what we haven't been able to do is say, you know, what New Yorkers are doing when they, you know, are good or not good at guessing where people are from in terms of boroughs is identify what it is that you guys are hearing that allows you to do that. So I hope we can figure it out.
Well, New Yorkers also move from borough to borough. Absolutely. At different times in their lives. Antonio from Park Slope, what do you think?
I'm originally from Hell's Kitchen, but I moved to Park Slope later in life. I think, does it only reside in like the five boroughs?
Well, this person comes from one of the five boroughs.
Okay. Originally, I thought like actually Westchester, but then I, you know, since it's only the five boroughs, I feel like it's Northern Bronx, like Riverdale, around there.
Okay. And we're going to try one more guess. This is Barbara from Stuyvesant Town. Where do you think it's from?
I think he's from Queens.
Okay. Ah. And why do you think that?
I'm from Queens, so he sounds like a lot of people that I grew up with.
There's that native speaker intuition.
I don't know. It's just something was familiar, so that's why I had to say it.
Now, we've been listening to all of these callers. Would you have identified them all as New Yorkers?
Yes, to varying degrees, I think so, yeah. You know, and again, something very crucial to understand about accents is that it's not always about using 100% of some feature that we've been talking about or zero, right? So there's a continuum in between. So a lot of the callers that are calling in are using these things we've been talking about to varying degrees. And that's a really crucial kind of point to understand about accent. So you can have kind of what people would think of as a heavy accent or one that's a little bit lighter. It still tells me that you're from New York.
Just one more call before we identify where the mystery talker is really from. Sally from northern New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Okay. I might be from northern New Jersey, but I grew up on Long Island. I spent 33 years in Colorado. I came back to Manhattan, and I am a New Yorker. And one more point. It is not a class situation. It's a pride situation. We speak correctly. And I think the gentleman was a Jewish man from Manhattan.
I think you speak wonderfully. Yeah, absolutely. I think pride is a very important thing.
Well, but I hear in Sally is something that I hear a bit. She said Manhattan.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of people dropping the consonants in the middle of words in the city. I have no idea why that is.
In that particular word, what's happening is not so much dropping it, but you're replacing it with a different sound. So, you know, if I was from England, I might say Manhattan with that very
But you might also say butter in England instead of butter.
Yes, they do. Everyone does different things with their T's in the middle of words. And particularly in words like Manhattan and in Staten Island, what we're doing is what linguists call a glottal stop. So we say something like Manhattan, right, or Staten Island.
But we also often, in New York anyway, substitute a D for a T, so we'll say butta.
At times, yeah.
And I want bread and butta.
Exactly, or D's and dem and D's and does. That's a very stigmatized feature of the New York accent, and I would say actually is being a little bit lost in the sense that I don't hear it as much in younger speakers because I think people have focused in on it as sort of a way to stereotype New York accent.
A listener from Westchester, Jesse, thinks our mystery speaker sounds like Anthony Bourdain. So should we find out who it is?
Oh, what did you want to know? My name is Ira Burns. I was born in Brooklyn and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
I don't think we got any Brooklyn guesses.
So this proves your point, don't you think?
It does a little bit, I think, unfortunately. Although, you know, I did love the one caller that called in and said, you know, and stood up for New Yorkers as having these native intuitions. And I think it's true. But, you know, this is a very interesting experiment that you ran, Leonard, in showing that there's something there, but people necessarily aren't guessing exactly right.
And our votes were two for Manhattan, two for the Bronx, and two for Queens.
So very
none
split.
None for Brooklyn.
Split vote.
Where do we pick up our accents? From our parents or our peer groups?
More from our peer groups. So, you know, as a very young child, from our parents, absolutely, and we learn language from our parents in general. But as we go into young childhood and into adolescence, we're incredibly influenced by our peers. And that's why your parents can be from somewhere else. So say they've moved from Chicago to New York, but you're born in New York. You can have a New York accent, and you probably will, because you'll be influenced by your friends.
Well, I've always wondered why that didn't happen with me. In the first grade, Miss Simani said to the class, "Leonard speaks well. Why don't you try to speak the way he speaks?" They hated me from that moment on.
Right. Well, that's the local pride, right? So there's two sides of the coin where you maybe sounded too upwardly mobile to them. They wanted you to sound more local.
So is this like being born in Germany and then coming to the United States and speaking with an American accent if you come here at a certain age,
yes,
but not being able to lose the foreign accent if you come at a later age?
That's exactly right. There's something we call in linguistics the critical period. And what that speaks to is this idea that children, their brains are incredibly plastic. And what that allows them to do is pick up accents, pick up new languages, and tons of other things. Seamlessly, with no effort. There's around, say, 11, 12, 13 years old, that seems to stop linguistically, so that if you come after that, you're going to have a foreign accent, most probably. Not for everyone.
But we've been talking about how there's a kind of a homogeneous New York accent with little distinctive differences.
Sure.
I used to live in Chinatown, where many people never learn to really speak English,
sure,
and there are other pockets, ethnic pockets around the city where people speak in a foreign language. So are those the exceptions? And would they be the exact same thing if we were in Chicago or San Francisco or Boston?
I don't think so. In fact, and I do think the idea of the ethnic enclave is becoming more and more rare. In fact, I have a colleague at NYU who is looking at the English of young adolescents growing up in Chinatown. So they're speaking English, and they're doing something unique with their English. It's influenced by their native language and their parents' native language, as well as by their peers around them as well. So I think it is going to be a uniquely New York, whatever it is, you know, their way of speaking, their accent.
People have been calling in, and we're going to take some of those calls. And we also invite you to tell us whether you think the New York accent is dying, changing, or just as strong as ever. The number is 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Sean from Huntington, Long Island. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, hey, Leonard. Hi, Kara. How you both doing?
Good. Hi, Sean.
You know, this ties in my question with the upward mobility and all that, and then I think you just touched on something, too, about the plasticity of the children's ears. But I hire a lot of kids for the summer in my business, and one thing I'm dead set against is saying axe. Like, I'd like to ask you something. And it ties in, I think, a lot with the upward mobility and the class consciousness. And I was just wondering if you had any ideas, like, where that came from.
I know exactly where it came from. In fact, it's a really interesting story. So in Middle English, so you know that English has changed a lot over the, you know, 1,500 years that it's been in existence. In Middle English, you had variability so that you could say ask or axe. And the two sounds are just switched. That actually carried all the way over into the States with the settlement patterns, as particularly in the American South. And so there was a period of time where anybody who lived in the South had the option of saying axe or ask. And it's been lost by a lot of speakers from the South. It's been maintained a lot in African-American English, which is kind of a social ethnic dialect that linguists like to describe. So you'll still hear it, but it's been very stigmatized. So I can see why you might have a reaction against it. A lot of people pointed out it's a great kind of cocktail party question that I always get. Why do people say axe? But in reality, we all said it at some point in English.
In fact, it's one of the older pronunciations.
Exactly. Yeah.
So maybe we should be more accepting of it.
I think we should. It'd be great.
We go now to Essie from New York. Hi.
Hi, I'm a native Manhattanite.
Great. Hi,
congratulations.
my comment is, I always thought the D's, Dems, and Does that you said is frowned upon was the influence of the Dutch language on English.
You know, I haven't seen any evidence of that. And in fact, there are a number of dialects that actually do something interesting with those THs. So it's not just in New York that you'll hear D's and Dem or something different. So in some dialects, people will replace a TH with a D. They'll replace it with a T, with an F. It's actually a really common thing. It happens in tons of different dialects of English. We don't know exactly if we can trace it all the way back to some particular root. So I'm not sure if it comes from Dutch. I haven't seen that evidence.
We have a listener, Tracy, in New York, who wants to talk about how some people in Long Island, actually many, say Long Island.
Oh, great.
How does that happen? Is that just because it's easier to say?
No, it's very similar to the process we were talking about with the intrusive R, where you add an R kind of where it's not necessary. This is sort of a similar thing, and it has to do with the sound at the end of long, which is made in the back of the mouth, similar to where G is made. And because there's a vowel following long in island, a lot of people will put what we call an intrusive G there as well. And you see it not just in Long Island, but in Manhattan, people used to say, for instance, the word singer as singer, mm-hmm. like almost rhyming with finger. So it was a common thing in New York that more people used to do. And now it's almost become like a shibboleth in the Long Island kind of thing. So some people still do that. Most people have lost that general putting in that intrusive G.
Gordon in Manhattan asks, what about this trend of ending every sentence with an uplilting question tone? Where does that come from?
That's a common thing also in English that we don't find just in America, but in Australian English and in British English. Consider it sort of an uptone. A lot of people will associate that with youth, so with a lot of young. I just did it, in fact. But
I always thought it was a Valley Girl invention,
exactly.
That then spread across the country.
Exactly. A lot of people associate it with a Valley Girl accent. In general, it's probably more of a broader change that that's happened in English, as I said, not just in the U.S., and is more associated with young people. So it probably started in with adolescents and young people. But, you know, I'm not an adolescent, and I still do it, and people will say, oh, you sound like a Valley Girl or something like that. So it really is associated with that Valley Girl accent. But I think it's a broader thing.
People will be a lot more tolerant when you move to Portland.
Right. Let's hope so.
Our next caller is Tanya from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I grew up in Rhode Island, or as they say, Rhode Island. One of the things, and as I said, I felt like I never had the Rhode Island accent. My mother's from West Virginia. My father's from Florida. But my brother is the serious Pocteca, you know, sort of like a Boston,
with
but
the
a
Boston,
little different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that they say in Rhode Island is, you guys. Like, hey, are you guys coming?
Right.
Which many people associated with New
York.
With
New
York,
absolutely, yeah. You know,
many of the things I'm hearing in Tanya's accent have been associated with New York.
Absolutely.
For example, she said Florida.
Exactly.
And people in that state say Florida. We say Nevada. They say Nevada. We say Orange.
We say
they
orange.
They say orange.
Yeah, and I say I have that particular lowering of the vowel before R's, even being from New Jersey as well. So I say orange and I say Florida and those kinds of things. Now, it's very interesting that you called in from Rhode Island, because the history of the settlement that I was talking about that links kind of Boston, New York, and this eastern seaboard, in fact, in a city like Providence, you're going to hear that same aw vowel that we talked about briefly. So you're going to hear talk and you're going to hear coffee.
Yeah.
So there are some similar features that actually we share with cities close by. That we're not exactly the same, of course, but we have that historical link.
Now, some listeners have questioned why New Orleans accents have certain similarities to New York accents. Why is that?
We think that it is due to a certain period in time where there was a lot of trade going on between New York and New Orleans, where there was settlement. Again, settlement patterns, so that New Yorkers were trading with New Orleans and then staying there and living there, so that if you hear, again, kind of a working class New Orleans accent, you get a little bit confused. It kind of sounds like a New York accent. It's not exactly the same, but it has a lot of the same features. And we think it has to do, again, with connection.
Sounds like a New Yorker who comes from South New York.
Very, very South New York, yes.
Judy from Washington Heights. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I wanted to talk about using different accents in different situations. Like, I'm from Washington Heights, but if I'm talking to someone I haven't met yet, or if I'm in a classroom, then I'll speak like this. But if I'm with my friends, I'm more likely to speak like this. So it really depends on, like, what's going on.
That's a great point. Every person does this, so there's no person that speaks the same exact way all the time. We all do this, and it's a little bit related to a theory we call accommodation theory, which has to do with, you know, talking kind of like the people around you. So if you're in a formal setting and you want to come across as serious, or if you're teaching, for instance, in a classroom, you're going to use your most formal way of speaking, and it's probably your most general American accent way of speaking. If you're with your friends at a bar later that night, your local accent is going to come out, and everybody has this, a continuum of the way that they talk.
We go now to Ralph from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the idea of gender differences. I spent a lot of time eavesdropping on people walking behind me, and one of the first things I noticed was that classic Long Island is a woman's accent. And that the use guys is a man's accent. I've never heard a woman say that, and I've never heard a man say Long Island.
You know, I don't know about those two particular features, but it's absolutely a great point and something that we often investigate in linguistics, which is, you know, the differences between males and females and the way that they might use dialects or any other type of language. So absolutely there are things that we associate with females and we associate with males. Sometimes we think women speak more formally or more, they tap into more kind of prestige features. Sometimes they do the opposite, you know, and they lead a change to use some sort of local accent. So it's a complicated picture, but you're absolutely right. There are gender differences in the way people speak.
When people come from other parts of the country, do they tend to hold on to their accents in the same way that foreigners do? For example, West Indians speak with a West Indian accent, I think, from the day they arrive to the last day of their lives.
Well, and they speak something that's related to English too, right? So it's different than coming and speaking a second language. But it really depends. It depends. We talked about age. So it's going to depend on the age at which you come. It's going to depend on your identification. So if I move to New York and I don't really like it here, I'm not going to be so motivated to take on some New York features and start sounding like a New Yorker. But if I love it and I want to stay forever, you're going to hear it. You're going to start hearing it in my speech. So we see a real continuum again of the way people react to a new place where they move, and it's about their ability, and it's also about, you know, whether they want to sound like where they now live.
A listener says that you can always tell somebody from New Jersey by the way they pronounce the word water. They
right.
say water.
Yeah, that's a common, again, another shibboleth. Yes, absolutely, the water.
And then there's a guide to New York accents, is that what it's called? Where they say the real trick is just to speak as loudly as possible. And you'll
well,
be
you
a
know,
New Yorker.
There's a lot to say about the fact that the New York accent, and it's an unfortunate thing, and clearly you can tell that I'm a fan of accents in general, but the New York accent is generally considered to be one of the least liked accents in the country. So if you ask people from other places, they will often rank a place like New York, New York City, or the South, for instance, as places where they don't like the way people talk. And in New York, it's often associated with some of these negative characteristics, like people are rude, they talk too fast, they talk too loud.
They interrupt
you, as you just did, Leonard. So, you know, it's all these. So these are stereotypes, of course. And we use language as a way to kind of express some of those things. So, yeah, there are those associations. I would, again, point out the flip side, which is that a lot of people, know that that's not true. And especially New Yorkers themselves have a lot of pride in the way they talk, and they should.
Kara Becker is assistant professor of linguistics at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. I thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank
you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.